The Crossing Gate, the official podcast of the Twin Cities Division of the National Model Railroad Association. The topics and discussions are about the world's greatest hobby, model railroading. Here are your hosts, Thomas Gazier and Ken Zeska.
Modelers retreat came around. I said, hey, you can.
No. And people asked, I said, no, he's in enough of Zoom. And everyone's like, yeah, we know his job. He's had enough.
Well, plus Joe is probably going to be there. So I said, you know.
Yeah. Well, we tried to keep Benish out. Wait. Oh, he's here. Still.
I was talking and able to be seen on Friday, but out of deference to you, Greg, Saturday, I did not.
So you could have been there. Or you weren't seen.
Yeah.
Right.
I'll be close, man.
I can not talk and be unseen tonight if you want. I just want to listen.
You might. We'll get a few comments in there.
All right. Tell me what I need to say.
Well, when I introduce you, say hello, because I've got a list if everybody shows up. Dan might not. He's waiting for his daughters to come home. Well, he might have quite the round table tonight. Or a square table, or I don't know, some odd
I don't
table.
Want to be on the round table. Those boys all died.
They know.
They did.
Not in the movie I saw. They got arrested.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think happened?
Only the guy guarding the river died, the Black Knight.
Oh, yeah.
It was a flesh wound.
What do you think happened to those guys in prison, though, Greg?
With a pretty face like yours.
That's what I'm worried about.
I think we have an idea what happened. David, you have audio.
I think so. Let me see here.
There he is.
Yeah.
Hello, Mr. Hamilton.
Hello, Mr. Joe.
How are you?
Fair to Midland.
Missed you up at Milch yesterday.
Did it work out pretty good? How many of you were there?
Just three. Well, four if you count Milt, but he's always there.
That's true. So is his wife.
Yes.
She was mad at Joe. Oh, my God.
Everybody's mad at me.
We got there early before she could put on makeup. It was the end of the world.
It's Tom's fault. He got there. He knows how fast I drive. He got there early.
Well, I always count on you getting lost. So I thought we'd get, you know, sugar rolls at Toby's, and then we'd go to Hamlet. That's
right. I went right to it this time. Sorry.
Yeah. You had the GPS. You wanted to run trains. Well, but Paul was there. Paul Krenz.
Yeah.
So we did some maintenance on some of his things and worked on some other stuff and ran some stuff. I brought up my, Dave, you'll like this. I brought up my Digitrack set LNWI.
Right.
And hooked that up and then used my iPhone. Ran perfectly throughout the entire basement.
Oh, sure.
Without a glitch, you know.
Yeah, that's a neat device. I kind of thought I was talking him into looking into buying one of those, you know, a year ago or whenever we were there before. But, you know, I think it's good that you did that. He can see the advantage of having it.
Right. That's what, instead of that JMRI, he wants to go to JMRI for operations. And I'm like, yeah, good luck with that. You know, that's just more computer time.
Right. Well, did it run pretty good overall? I mean, because it's been a while.
Yeah, there wasn't much, you know, the usual glitches. I'm going to rebuild, like, the track that goes down to the ore dock.
Right.
So he's going to trace that whole curve and all those switches, and I'm going to hand build that. Yeah, and that'll run better. And then he had a couple of spots where, you know, I think humidity.
I was about 2 weeks ago, I went down in the basement, and I've been running stuff back and forth on parts of the railroad, but just for the heck of it, I closed my swing gate because I wanted to see what surprises were in store for me. You know, that's where I see all my expansion and contraction. And with that gate closed, I had gaps of a quarter of an inch between the gate track and the main track on either side of the gate. So there was, well, maybe a little less than a quarter, but the basement was about, the railroad moved 3/8 of an inch. That's really the bottom line, you know. So I made that gate so that I can just relay the track on it all the time. And I have different re-railers cut to, you know, so it's a faster job. I haven't done it yet because I thought I better wait another month and see if it starts growing back the other way. If I did try to run, I would just need a good head of speed to jump over the gap, and then we'd be okay. So anyway,
well, you have to handle all your freights with E units. So
it is the Zephyr, right? You Zephyr, you can speed it up.
Well, that's it. Just that's why you use a Zephyr. You know, the west, the west wind, and everything's okay. Such is life.
I don't know when the last time I ran it.
I made a track cleaning train that's got like three or four different track cleaning cars on it. I've been going back and forth, other than the gate piece, just to try to, you know, clean up things a little bit. And it's actually more fun doing it with a track cleaning train than it is just doing it by hand. So
I've discovered a better way to clean the track.
Which is?
You have an operating session and you give everybody a bright boy.
Now you're talking.
Yep. And then you can kiss all your points goodbye on your turn.
No, that's true too.
You also then have to deal with the group of people that says, you know, if you use a bright boy, you put real fine scratches on the surface of the rail, and then, you know, that'll collect more dirt going forward.
That's what duct tape is for.
You know what duct I did? Tape.
You put it over their mouths and you can't hear them.
Did you ever see that? I think Centerline made a comment that it had like a square in the middle of it and a little roller that you would wrap with whatever.
Yep. Richie has a couple of those.
I've got one that I found. I know there's another one. I took one of those Mr. Clean magic erasers.
Yep.
At like that white kind of weird material.
Yeah.
I cut it to fit in that hole and I push that down till it touches the track. And then I'm dragging that behind like three locomotives, or pushing it in front of three locomotives. And it does a really nice job of, you know, wiping the rail off.
Is it really dirty when you take it off?
Yeah.
Really?
That works, huh?
Ingenious idea, Dave.
Yep. Oh, and I have a ceiling in my basement, just like Greg does, you know, just like some of you guys do. But the track just gets this weird, I don't know, it's like a black kind of whatever. And maybe it's oxidizing.
Yeah.
It could be it's got something to do with that nuclear waste pile that I keep down there. It must be radiating and causing a, you know, some sort of a reaction.
That causes the LEDs to burn out faster.
Is that what it does?
Yeah. Okay. Now the black stuff is oxidation.
Yeah. So it's easy to take, you know, if we were operating every month, it wouldn't be an issue. But, you know, with things being pretty stagnant, I guess that's just a price you have to pay.
Hello, Mike. Can you hear us? You got audio?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Very good. Very good.
And how come I don't see me?
You don't see you? Down in the lower left-hand corner, it says start or stop video. You'll see a mute microphone, and then you'll see a video either on or off. You don't have to have video for this if you don't want to. We try and keep Joe to have his turned off, but it's no luck. So.
Yeah, I've got pants on today. Be happy.
Yeah. Well,
baby steps.
Yeah.
Pants and a shirt.
Hey, look at it's a polo sweater. So I'm kind of high class today. It's Sunday. I'm dressed up.
There you go. You want some black licorice?
Oh, there's William. Hey, who knows how to get a hold of Zeska?
I can text him.
Yeah, send him a text. I sent him one too. Yeah, I don't know if Dan's going to make it, but otherwise we get.
I'll do that here. Where's my phone? There he is.
Yeah, I sent him a message.
Yes, sir. I'm going to drop out and come right back.
Yeah, I'll let you back in.
Yeah, thank you.
You know the password swordfish. I think that's the password.
Sure it is an avocado?
No. Wasn't that the Marx Brothers with swordfish? Yeah. That's not the password anymore. I changed it.
All right, here I am.
There you are. Look at you.
Sorry about that, guys, but here I am.
Hi, Mike.
It's all right.
Tom, all I have for Zeska is email. That's not going to do us any good if he's not checking email.
I sent him a messenger.
All right.
William, can you hear us? Are you in here? He's working on it.
You know, it's hard for us old guys, or at least this old guy, to know how this computer stuff works. I mean, I have to rinse the tubes every once in a while because they get clogged.
Yeah.
How do you dry them?
In the sun.
There you go.
Brett.
Well, yeah, I got him on Messenger. We'll see if
Are you there, Tom?
There he is. Hi, William.
There's a video.
Hey, Joe.
Hello. Can't see you.
Ken's trying to start his own meeting.
Oh, all right. Well, maybe we'll go join him.
See how you are. You guys probably would.
He's a lot more fun.
He is.
Oh.
I'll even admit that. I'm still here. I'll even admit that. Okay. Yeah, because he has an account too. I suppose, like Greg, you got a work account.
Yeah, I'm actually the administrator for our company, so it's kind
of
oh,
poor guy. Everybody got a cocktail, I hope. It's a good one.
Greg, when I first started back to work, people would set up Zoom meetings, and I just was like, oh crap, another Zoom meeting. And now when people say, can you come into the office? I go, well, just can't we do it by Zoom?
You just don't want to be at work.
I don't want to wear pants today. There he is.
Oh, there's Ken.
Yep.
Hey, Ken's here. The gang's all here.
I don't see him. He's not on my thing. How lucky him.
Okay. Well, okay. So here's the topic, and I'll go over some ground rules. So I want to have your guys' explanations on what keeps you motivated, what keeps the inertia going, lighting a fire like 15 minutes a day, what pushes you towards the railroad, and also if you want to add what pushes you away from it. So, and then with this, the ground rules will be if you can mute when you're not talking. We got a lot of us, so shorten your answers if you can and your comments, and then open up your chat window if you got something to say. And if I want to call on you, see if I can hold up a name like William or something. I got Joe and Mike and Greg. But I'm just going to be the referee because I want to hear from you guys. But I'll start it out by introducing you guys. And when I say your name, just say hello so listeners can associate you with whatever voices.
We've had a lot of
This is recorded.
Okay.
So no, you can swear and we'll blame you anyway. I'll have the foghorn, the Split Rock foghorn. This alphabetically. All right, so here we go. Welcome everybody to another Crossing Gate podcast. We have quite the crew here, and we're starting off. We have Joe Binnish with us.
Good evening.
We have Greg Dahl.
Hey there.
We have Dave Hamilton.
Howdy.
Mike Jordan's joined us.
Afternoon or evening.
Will Sampson is here.
Hello to all.
And my awesome co-host, Ken Zeska.
Good to hear from you this evening.
And I, of course, am Thomas Gazier. And tonight, or today, we're going to talk about what motivates you to keep working on your layout and project. How does 15 minutes a day, how do you carve that out to do what you want to do? And how do you keep the inertia going? And what pushes you into the layout room or pushes you out? So I'll open it up to you guys. If anybody, whoever wants to go first on how you find time for your modeling.
Well, I'll jump on the grenade right away. The 15 minutes, I mean, just to be able to get interested, I think a lot of times you get overwhelmed, but to get interested is a lot of times dive into something really, really simple. And I mean, by very simple is just, I paint the wheel sides a lot of times just to kill a little bit of time. And that it takes me sometimes just 15 minutes will do an entire car. So I think that's just a quick little thing I can do. If I do it in the morning, sometimes I'll do it before I start work, and I'm just looking to kill a little bit of time after the kids have gone to school. And that's just a quick and easy. Paint the wheel sides, makes your cars look nicer, and you don't have to try to do 50 of them in one night.
I think that's a good one. Have something set up. Anybody else have a quick project that they love to go down and do and keep things going?
I find that if I have a whole bunch of things, little projects half done, it's easy to go down and pick something that excites you for that day and get it done. So tonight I'm painting wheels on a 37 Studebaker. So fortunately there are only four of them, but it's going to take me 15 minutes and then, you know, it might get me going on to something else.
What I do is it seems that my workbench collects objects other than model railroading, and it'll get to a certain point where I'll clean the workbench and start to discover some quick projects that I can complete or set up to start when I have more time. So that, just organizing sometimes gives me the motivation to continue.
I like that. 15 minutes of cleaning helps me out a lot.
Yep.
I've found that too. My model railroad tends to be the world's longest shelf. So I end up with just stuff all over it. And since we're not regularly operating these days, it's gotten worse and worse. And that's actually kind of that's a demotivating sight to go down there and see what should be a railroad. And it's got boxes, pieces of wood, all sorts of other junk on it. And so I'm with Mike. Going down sometimes and just cleaning things up actually motivates me, because now all of a sudden I can sort of see, now let's set everything aside. Let's get the one project out and start working on it.
Well, I guess I'm in a whole different world because I'm trying to get this AP certificate taken care of. You know, that's been like taking over everything I want to do railroad wise. And all I do is work on these 8 freight cars that I have to have, you know, for the evaluation that will come up at some point. A lot of times it's more than 15 minutes a day. Sometimes I'll sit at the kitchen table for 3 hours working on these things. You know, I guess I'm going to be the exception this time. I've got plenty of motivation.
Well, you have the motive. Do you think having that goal helps you, that you can see the end point?
Yes, definitely. Because prior to the COVID adventure, you know, since it was an operating railroad, it was always a chore to get it ready for the next operating session. But at the same time, I knew I had to get it ready. So then I would be working in 15 and 30 minute segments, if you will, like restaging and, you know, maybe moving a few cars here and there, doing a little tuning up here and there. But with the, since we've been basically stagnant operation wise, I first started on that AP certificate for scenery, and that took many, many weeks of redoing the area that I, you know, submitted, if you will. And now that that's out of the way, I've gotten onto this freight car kick, and I think I'm actually discovering something I like doing, which that might be a problem going forward, but it's almost fun to do it, you know, adding all these brake lines and, you know, staining pieces of wood to make a deck for a car or whatever. So it's actually succeeded in opening up a whole new facet of the hobby that I was never really, you know, very enthusiastic about pursuing.
I'll get you a resin kit, Dave. You want a box car or a tank car?
I actually have 4 of them to build. And that's what, you know, I'm probably, what month is this anyway? This is March. So I think sometime around the middle of April, I'm going to attack 3 resin cars, a caboose, 1 box car, and I'm not sure what the third one's going to be. So when I get done with those, I'll help you out, Joe.
Great.
As we've gotten deeper into the COVID shutdown, I've started all sorts of projects. And so now I've got all sorts of projects that are big projects that are half done. And sometimes that has gotten me to the point where I get paralyzed when I go downstairs because I don't know which one to start. But when you wanted to put this topic together, I thought what a great opportunity to go back and use a technique that I used to use in my life. And that is put together a short list of things you want to get done. And I need to keep it to 5 items because if you make your list too long, that paralyzes you also. And so so I've started that. I have to draw my track plan. And once I get that done, I can turn in 2 AP certificates. But if I don't write it down, I don't think about it. I know I have a turnout that needs repair after ballasting. Sometimes it gets sticky. So I just have lots of little projects to do. But, you know, in the past, I also get myself tied up in big jobs like the Modeler's Retreat. And I wrote a couple articles for a magazine. These things end up taking a lot of time. So I'm using tonight's conversation to start my 15-minute-a-day projects. So thanks for the idea.
Yeah, I think you're right about the list. Does anyone else use a list, and do you keep it in your layout room or?
I've got it right here.
And, okay.
And I say that, and it's funny. As soon as Ken said that, I thought, you know, my list, I'll just rattle it off for you. And it's not long. It's about 8 or 10 items. I have installed servo number 6 and 7, put in front rear headlights into 588. I want to run an op session. So I just run, I switch one industry, paint wheel sides, as I mentioned earlier. Solder leads to rail joiners. I temporarily solder them up so I've got them on hand and don't have to deal with it when I'm laying track. Apply decals to 588. Paint the GN roof caboose silver. And I've got sort the tool cribs. So my tools, I just sort them every once in a while. So they're laying all over the place. I go gather them from everywhere and just put them into the drawer. And then I have a GP35 that needs LEDs. But Ken's right. This is how I organize my mind. And a lot of times I clean everything up. I get out one of the infamous blue totes. And I fill it with the projects that have just overwhelmed and gotten too carried away. And then I'll itemize and start going through that tote and I'll pull out one kit or I'll pull out one project and set that out in front of me and say, that's going to be maybe the week's goal. And I can chip away at it 15 minutes a day. But the lists are a great idea.
You guys prioritize those lists or by pink slip or anything on your layout?
I personally don't. I just use a just a piece of paper I've got just listed here, and I'll just put a check mark next to it once I've done it. And then once I've crossed everything all off, I'll continue kind of even adding throughout the week. And I do that for buying things too. Instead of running to the hobby shop 10 times, I've got in my phone list, just I need LEDs, I need black paint, I need glue, I need canopy glue, or whatever it might be, and just kind of keep adding to it and look at that just periodically.
I used to write down the list on a MNCNL piece of notepad here. Those always got left at home. So then I started taking pictures of the list with my phone. And it was like, well, dummy, why don't you just write it in the phone? So that's what I do when I need something, or if I need to get something done, type it in the list on the phone. And that makes it, because I don't go anywhere without the dang thing.
Yep.
So it makes it much easier to keep track of what I need at the hobby shop or whatever.
So as we're all layout owners, and like Greg said, you have a layout, it turns into the longest shelf. I'm guilty of that too. Lance Meinheim once mentioned an instant-on layout. Do you feel if you had your workbench and everything away from your layout, if you could walk down and just turn on your layout, run trains, would that fire you up? You know, because sometimes when you have so many things on the layout, then you're like, oh, I don't want to even bother with it. Do any of you have a layout where you can just go down there and I want to run a train, relaxing?
Well, I have to admit, I have an advantage there. We take care of our grandson, and the highlight of his day is to go down and watch a train run around. I have one loop, the outer loop, that's just my show-off loop that I can go down there and turn it on. And he and I can walk around the basement. I can carry him around the basement 3 or 4 times and let him watch the trains. So that's nice.
Boy, I've made a real effort, especially over the last year or so, to not put anything on the railroad. So I could go down there right now and fire it up. There's nothing stacked up anyplace, you know, except on the, I have 2 desks in one part of the basement, you know, and those are actually neat. I'm not sure how that happened. You know, I've been working on the kitchen table, like I said before, just because there's more light up on the upstairs part of the house. But I've really made an attempt not to stack stuff. And maybe that's a real effort, but it's actually succeeded. I've gotten into the habit of keeping the railroad clean, and that pays off because you don't have to neaten it up every time you want to run something. But it takes an effort to do it.
It does take an effort. I've got 8 passenger cars up here for Randy that I'm painting, that the layout is the storage space. So that motivates me too. I like getting paid for.
Well, even having these deadlines for us to, I know Joe, you operate, so you know a deadline's coming. You're going to have to clean it to get guys to run the railroad. So having those even just kind of in the mix, obviously right now it's a little more difficult, but having an operation session, having, you know, the modeler's retreat, I think is another good example. If you did a layout tour, you did something of that nature where you're kind of, you're forcing yourself to do it. It feels like a commitment. Sometimes it could be overwhelming at times, but in the end, having that set up, it gives you the chance to clean it. I keep mine pretty clean because I'm much like Ken. I've got a son that he likes to run trains, and we have the opportunity to go down there. And like I said, I like to switch an industry, you know, just every now and again, kind of as a stress reliever.
Greg, do you find that? Can you go down and like run, you know, one side of your layout? You having probably one of the larger layouts of the group. Does that easier or not so easy?
I've got it. I was sort of kidding about the world's longest shelf because I am pretty much in. I keep it pretty tight. I mean, I can operate, especially parts of it. Yeah, if I'm working on one area, I can always operate the other part. I find this conversation interesting because I don't find myself doing it that often, because for me, operating with a group of guys or gals is a lot better than operating by myself. When I built my layout, I built it kind of like you did, Tom, where I could operate it by myself if I wanted to. Like William says, go down, switch one industry and go back. And that was my plan. But it's possible, but I don't find myself doing it, oddly. And I don't know why, but it's just the way it is.
Like, now, William, you're thinking that operations, as we all have operation-oriented layouts, will give us a purpose to keep working on it. Is that a valid point? Or
I do. I feel like so often we can find ourselves, I know Ken, he's fortunate to have a loop that he can kind of as a showcase loop. My dad has the same on his railroad. It's nice when people come over and they can see a train just kind of go in a loop. But I feel like for myself, I've gone so point to point that I'm forced to have to be, you know, there looking at it. But having the operations, I think just genuinely kind of motivates a almost kind of a passion to be able to have that world that you're starting to create for you to get away to. I can go over, if you go over to Joe Binish's, you're back in the 1950s. You go over to my dad, you're in the 1970s. And you kind of have this, I don't know what it is, but I think if guys, they do it well and you do it right, it kind of becomes this game that you get to go play. And it isn't as, it's not work to me. I think it's fun. I think that's where I feel like it gives the hobby a purpose, and we're having fun doing it and having conversations even like this is, to me, is entertaining. And it's something I think all modelers should kind of get engaged in, whether it's through the modelers retreat or through op session.
Something like that. One of the things we've talked about is as we dive into operations and modeling and paralysis by analysis, and where you just get so hung up on something that you just can't go any farther till you find out the color of the fire hydrants in that town. Ken, do you think that's a problem? Do you think do you know anybody who does that besides me and other people in this chat?
No, Tom, I don't think you're unique in that. But I try to have selected models or selected projects that I'm fanatical about, and then I have role players, and I find that helps me. But I do get crazy when it comes to doing scenery, and I'll anguish over lots of different pictures. And of course, I model the 60s, so a lot of the pictures back then are not color. So I can make my own circles. I can start chasing my own tail to try to find information that probably doesn't exist. And even if it does, I might be the only person that would ever know it. Yeah, I do have that problem.
That's an easy trap to fall into if you're a prototypical modeler. My railroad is refrigerator cars, and I follow Tony Thompson's blog, and I have to read it with one eye closed, and because you can go so far down the rabbit hole that you lose the idea that this is fun. And since we're talking about what motivates us, I've had a few operating sessions during this COVID thing, and knowing that someone's coming over, I want the railroad to run as best as I can make it. And the other thing is, after an operating session, I have a list of things I should have fixed that I didn't. So then that motivates me to go down and keep those repairs up. These Zoom type calls are a great motivator. My last project is I painted some scenery, and that scenery was motivated by Tom talking about my railroad. And I realized I could do a signature scene for the railroad. So it took probably a week and a half of doing a little bit every evening. But once I got started, you know, it was a motivator to finish it. That's part of that motivation, is interaction with other modelers really is important, because if you don't have that social engagement with your railroad, it could just turn into a collection of cobwebs.
Greg, I know you do a lot of studying on your layout, trying to get what was going on for brewery and auto traffic. Where do you think the line falls in that? And I'm kind of picking on you because your wife, all of our spouses are great resources. And you always tell me the famous line when what your wife says when you show her something that you think is wrong. I wish you would share that with everybody.
that came about one time where, you know, I was hemming and hawing on a project, and, you know, I was just, it's this typical thing, right? The analysis by paralysis. I didn't know what was right. This project wasn't coming out right. And, you know, of all the stuff going on, and she just looks at me and she goes, "That's what's bothering. That's the part that's preventing you from operating, right?" You know, so actually the thing that was interesting, I think Ken had an excellent point. He called him role player. You talked about, there was a fellow who was a signal maintainer for the real railroads, and he developed a model railroad. I don't know who the modeler is. He was just fanatical about the signals on his model railroad. And for me, it was like, you know, signals are neat. I don't have any on my current layout. It'd be kind of cool to have them. But I wouldn't know red over green versus, you know, what's a dwarf signal used for and anything else. It's just, oh, they're pretty lights, you know, Christmas colors, and they come on when the train goes by. That's great. You know, but it wouldn't bother me. But I'm sure for him, he would just have an aneurysm if he saw something, you know. So I think Ken's point about, you know, there's certain things, you know, things that are important to you. For me, it's large industry, right? It drives me nuts when I park a boxcar next to a building that is the same size as the boxcar. So I've got, you know, very large industries. I mean, 4 or 5 feet long. But that's what bothers me. But everything else is sort of a role player. It's like, yeah, we picked up some Milwaukee MP15 ACs. And you're like, if it's 1985, the Milwaukee wasn't selling their MP15 ACs. They're probably the only engines that were running, you know, that were running well by then, right? But it's like, yeah, that doesn't bother me, right? So for someone else, it would. So I find that an interesting part, because I think everybody has certain things that bother them and certain things that don't. And as a guest at somebody's house, I always try to figure out, okay, I'm not going to point out things that are obviously not important to them.
William, what were you were going to mention something there too about how Mike said people inspire them.
Well, I think kind of going off of Greg's role players, it's funny because when we have operations like this, the role players that you have, you almost kind of think of what pieces can you plug into each of the roles on your railroad. Some guys really like switching. Some guys really like running the main. Some guys really like certain niches. Some guys are really good at certain jobs and they kind of have that role. That's their thing. And, you know, kind of to Greg's point, the larger industries and even to Mike how on his railroad, he does the reefer business and he's having to switch and move the cars around. And there's kind of a role that goes into, you know, turning a car over and what is involved in a session. But that's, I think, what's key when you're picking who's going to come to a particular op session, who kind of fits in well and who's new that would like to kind of integrate. If you bring in 9 greenhorns, you could really have an interesting scenario. But if you've got, you know, 6 of your regulars and you bring in 3 other new guys, you can kind of integrate them into the system. But yeah, the role playing side, I think, is definitely kind of interesting. But I had a question kind of to everybody, and it would actually be, does anybody have any inspirational fellow modelers that kind of give them that kick in the pants that they need? Do you guys have guys around you that are kind of saying, hey, you know, are you going to jump on this anytime soon?
I think Jeff Crocker is a great modeler. And so that's an inspiration. And then Jack Goosh over in Wisconsin is another great modeler. And then there's a local guy, Tom Gazer, that has upped my game a little bit, you know, just attention to detail and making the railroad itself run. I mean, nothing falls off of a piece of track unless you made a mistake. So, you know, there are those local people, but I think everybody that operates has one strong point that I steal from and then take credit. So, you know, it's not just those 3 people. I mean, everybody's, you know, I stole a good idea from John O'Brien by color coding the waybills by putting little different colored dots on them, you know. So, you know, that's what I stole from him, but I'm taking credit for it because he sticks the circles on his waybills and I print them off on the computer. So they're mine, damn it.
Yeah. I always say that too. If you steal from me, you've stolen twice. So Dave, how about you, Dave? I know you know almost everybody in this town. Who have you had anybody that's inspired you? And
well, kind of less than John and Joe, I would say, just because of the frequency of going over to their places, and you know, and that's what accounts for some of this freight car mania that I'm slowly winding myself up to. But you know, you could, it's kind of like Mike saying that, you know, all these railroads have something that are appealing. You know, I like Tom's because of the simplicity of the operation and whatnot. And yet it I think it runs great. I mean, Hotfetch layout, we never run it, but just walking around there and looking at everything, you know, it just amazes me sometimes at the things I notice that I didn't notice 10 years ago when I first started walking around there. So, and like I say, the freight car thing with Joe and Les, I mean, it's starting to intrigue me. I don't think I'm ever going to reach the level they're at, but at the same time, I know they can give advice when we ask for it, or I ask for it, even if I don't want to hear it, you know, I know I can get the advice from them. And yeah, so they're influential. And watching Bill's videos, you know, my wife likes that. She's always saying, oh, is there a new one? It's a week. Is it a new one? You know, so that's, and I've picked up a couple things watching the stuff that he's doing. So I guess we're all here to inspire each other, really.
And I know, let me go to Ken, because we all kind of travel in the same circles, but we have all had our own little niche. And Ken, you being an S-scaler, there's an S-scale little mafia crew that you've all reached out to and inspired each other. You know, do they fire each other up? Are people in the S-scale group, you know, giving you ideas, or do you help them out?
Yeah, they do. But I found that we've been getting together for years. So the familiarity, we have more of a deal where if you do something they don't like it, they'll come up and they'll look at it askance and one will say to the other, you don't suppose he's going to leave it like that? The other guy will say, well, I don't know. I wouldn't. But then again, it's not my layout. And then they walk away. So, you know, you've been pinged. But one of the things that I found through the Twin Cities division and through the podcasts that we've been doing is that now I've been able to get in and see what so many other modelers are doing. And I think that's inspirational. there are a lot of things that I look at and I'll write down or I'll consider and I'll say, you know, nah, I'm not going to pick up on that. But there's other things that are just amazing. And I find that's what's so much fun about the hobby is there's so many different aspects of it to enjoy. And I can get a lot of enjoyment out of watching what someone else does. We're here to inspire each other. I think that's a good point.
And I think that was true. When we were recently at this modeler's retreat and we had this slideshow of everyone's models and projects and this, and I was hoping that it would inspire people rather than intimidate them. You know, a lot of us, I would be inspired to do what Bob Rivard does and what everybody else in this room does. You know, I think you guys hit a nail on the head that we inspire each other. I don't feel there's an intimidation factor because, like Mike says, you'll learn from them. There's really no secrets. If you ask any of us, how did you do this? We'll tell you.
Well, I think that's part of seeing stuff that's half done. Anybody that goes over to a railroad that's half done, and in that slideshow you mentioned, Kevin Foley had a flat car that he hadn't painted. And I asked him, you know, what are you going to paint it? And he's going NP. And, you know, it's seeing the stuff that's mid-process. We so often look at the stuff that's done and think, oh, yeah, that's overwhelming. I can't do that. There's way too much detail there. I can't weather it like that. And we all started somewhere. We all started at that unpainted flat car. We all started at a point that you hadn't acquired these skills and you slowly just kind of add them together. And eventually you've got something that you can present. I mean, a lot of times the videos that I put together that that Dave mentioned, I do that to inspire fellow modelers. I could sit here and just keep rattling away with the stuff that I'm doing, but I sure hope showing bench work, showing mistakes, showing where you can take stuff to. And it's almost one of those things that you're not going to be able to do it unless you kind of just dive into it and try it. You're going to mess up a paint scheme. You're going to mess up, you know, something that you might be working on. But I always say is don't jump into the most complicated project that you can think of that's got four paint colors. Start with maybe just a straight brown box car and learn what works and what doesn't. Yeah, a lot of great points. I learned from everybody. I think that's what it's all about, the community.
That's good. Do you guys feel like we talked about this? I don't want to say the word pressure, but that's kind of what it is. Mike brought this up. If you have an op session coming up, you got to prep for that. If you have an article coming up or an AP judgment day, you want your layout to look good. If you're doing an AP project, you got to finish building and doing the paperwork. Modelers retreat can't do, okay, we have to organize and bring people together and do this. Does pressure play into it? Does a deadline help get you into that basement and finish a project?
Absolutely. That is a great motivator. And sometimes you even have to do it to yourself in that you set up an operating session and you know you've got certain things to do. It forces you to do them.
I agree with that.
I find that I hate it when I set up an op session because then I realize all the things I need to do. But I'm so happy when I actually get going and I start doing those, you know, cleaning off the top, making sure the rail, making sure the digitrack's fine. Then it's just, and once the session comes and goes, I'm like, okay, this was great. I why don't I do this more often? Yep. And then the next time I schedule one and all of a sudden, oh man, now I got a bunch of guys coming over. I gotta do this also.
Do you feel that focuses you? I mean, like you said, you clean it off and you want to do the switch points and the wheels. Maybe operate, does hosting it and the pre-planning focus you more?
For me, definitely, because now then it comes down to how do I make this run well? I don't have to worry about, is this building weathered? Is, you know, do I have, you know, I mean, things like, do the trains roll? Do they stay on the track? Do they not stutter? You know, it really focuses you on what's really, at least for, because I'm in it for the operation. Modeling is sort of second, and then everything else is, yes, it's certainly.
Dave, do you feel pressure setting up the queue?
Well, you know, it's funny because it's like the conversation has now gone in a circle because going back to the operating thing, every time there's a session, you know, once the session is over, I'll make a little list of things I've noticed that I have to fix. So we're right back to the list thing again, you know, and I know that I think we were the last few years before COVID, I was hosting about 15 sessions a year. So that was enough to keep you really busy keeping up with that list that was created as a result of the operating session. And even though it's a regularly operating railroad, it's amazing how many little things, you know, would pop up. And so I'm right back on the list thing. And yeah, there was pressure to get them all done. And not always the day of the session, the next session, I would try to get it all done right away, you know, just so I wasn't pushing too hard right at the end. So that was my focus all the time. And that's one thing that's nice, I think, about not operating right now is that it's real easy to get involved with all these other projects down there that I probably never would have really gotten so gung-ho about. So it's an interesting paradigm shift.
Ken, have you found that trying to install operations on yours has moved up some timeline on working on areas?
More than that, it's focused me because there's so much to do on a large layout. But if I know that I'm going to operate and I'm going to operate three different jobs, that's where I have to focus. And then I've got some things that I've got marked down in other parts of the layout. And I say, no, I have one whole industrial area that is just at sketching on the top of the tabletop, figure out what it's going to do. But I stay away from there because I know I've got to concentrate on other things. Yep. It focuses.
Well, one of the things in terms of focus is sometimes when you're in the middle of a project, you kind of just bail out on it and you give up. And if you give up on it, it's half done. You walk away from it and you think you're never going to just address it again. One of them, I was working on those STL-39s, and thankfully Joe chimed in and said, you know, hey, I'll paint those for you, because I was intimidated to paint a brass locomotive that I had spent enough on to begin with. And then I was going to lay down paint and I wasn't confident with my airbrush skills. Sometimes it's even allowing that little bit of an exchange between fellow modelers that, I mean, he's clearly a skilled painter and I'm clearly learning to paint. And then he's pointing out, he says, well, here's how you do it. It's easy. And the next thing you know, I got my airbrush out and I painted a couple cabooses, and I had been doing mostly rattle can stuff, but that kind of a mid-project blues where you kind of run into, you know, I'm not going to keep going on it because there's something that's stopping me. It's almost kind of that exchange of the skill between fellow modelers. Do any of you guys run into that type of, you know, mid-project? You get a little hung up and how do you keep moving forward?
My whole railroad is that. You can put a lot of pressure on yourself, but I just say it's a hobby that fills my time and is interesting. So I've taken some projects and just put them in a little box, set them off to the side, and then when I get motivated to finish it, then I have incentive to finish that project. If I get too much pressure for a deadline, sometimes it's just best to set it aside and then, you know, just let your modeling skills pick it up and finish it.
I find that if I am not careful and buy too much stuff, I always want to go to the shiny object, the shiny new thing. Staying focused or motivated on a project. Sometimes if I'm not motivated for a project, I don't do good work, so I don't want to be working on it. But I have to stop myself from going on eBay and buying new things, like the Studebaker.
This reminds me of a phrase, Dan Dosa, who couldn't make it to me. He always talks about, he was telling me, he says, you know, the hobby is there to serve you, not the other way around. So if, you know, you feel pressure, if there is a project that's just falling, you know, it just isn't getting to completion, or there's something blocking you from doing, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's, and I fall into that trap all the time where it's like, oh, I can't get this painted, or, you know, something, I broke something on this, and now I either go get a part for it and I'll never get a paint, you know, I'll never get it fixed. And then I was like, why is it bothering me? You know, why am I a slave to this? And I think that happens, which is why I have two workbenches. And so one has one project, and when that gets stuck, the other has the other project.
I think the great balance in the checkbook is have more of your mid projects been sold at a flea market, or have you bought someone else's mid project at a flea market? I think that's the equation, because, you know, in Twin Cities area, the flea market, there's a lot of guys who opted out in the middle of something that you're like, oh, I want that now. Now I'm in the middle of it and I don't know what I'm going to do. Mid-project blues. Yeah, but do you feel some of that too is also the old cliche of too many irons in the fire? You guys feel like sometimes you're being distracted by too many things, or has that happened to you, Ken, or anybody?
I absolutely think it is. And a disadvantage I have is that I can't go down to the hobby shop and buy as much as somebody can in another scale. That's good because it keeps my pocketbook a little better, but it means that every project becomes a bigger project. So, it would be way too easy. It is way too easy to just overwhelm myself with projects.
I found that I've made peace with the fact that I've got 30 projects. You know, yes, the downside I find that having a lot of projects going is that it seems like nothing's getting to come, right? I can work for 5 minutes a day on 10 different projects. So now I've just blown an hour, 12 different, I've blown an hour, but I've only gotten 5 minutes worth done on this. It's going to take me all year. But then there are certain weeks or months where all of a sudden 12 projects will all come to completion and be like, this is awesome. So I've made peace with that fact that I'll have a whole ton of stuff going, but I don't mind that. It doesn't bother me. I know it does bother a lot of others.
Well, sometimes it bothers you just because it's exposed and it's like staring at you. And that's where I says a lot of times I'll throw it into that infamous blue tote. I've only got one that I'll have projects in. And I just, once that thing gets full, I just start digging it all out and I find a couple that I can do. And then it might go back into the tote. But sometimes it's even just having it sitting there in front of you, just kind of intimidating. If you just put it away for a little bit, or like Mike had mentioned, just put it in a box, set it on the shelf for a little bit, and then revisit it. And it might re-inspire you the next time you open up. You're like, well, gee, I didn't even realize I purchased this, or I didn't know I was halfway through this project.
Well, the other thing that I find is if I get motivated and I'm working on a project, I get frustrated because I want to keep moving, but the glue isn't dry. So I have to force myself to start another project just so that I don't manhandle something and break it while I'm building it. So sometimes having more than one project you can go back and forth on is a...
Well, and letting that paint dry. You got to make sure the paint's dry before you lay the decals on it.
No, you don't. You can decal over wet paint. But
if you look at my railroad cars, before I weathered them, there are fingerprints all over them. And that's why I do heavy weathering.
Dave, what were you going to say?
Nothing that we want on the podcast.
Okay. I'll lead with that. But I like the idea of the project boxes. I've dealt with this by buying these clear acrylic shoe boxes at the craft store. And if I'm going to do a project, okay, I'm going to build this hopper car. Everything for that goes in there. And I'll put a little index card that says, you know, Minnesota Commercial 1701. So I know what's in that. And the hopper car goes in there. Then when I buy the decals, it goes in there, the correct paints, prototype photos. And, you know, as I try and collect it, and then I know, okay, when I go to that, I can, that's what I got going for, you know, or I need to get something. I can make a list of what do I need to finish this off.
I thought you were going to say that's, you were going to say that's when I take it over to Joe's.
That's what it is when I take it to Joe's and I buy him some Dunkin' Donuts and I go, yes. Here, I want this painted, bring it to Dosa to decal. And then, okay, but we talked about others. Now, here's one of the things that fires me up is because we all stare at our own layouts too long. But when we hear our friends that are in this room want something done, that fires me up. Greg knows this and Dan knows this and some of the other guys have been beneficial from this. Do you guys feed off each other's, like, you know, here's someone, I don't really want to do this. Well, I'd like to build that depot. I know Mike's seen what I've done for their Sierra Railway for Ed Pete. Do you guys enjoy making things or helping out your fellow modelers?
Boy, long pause there, guys.
I was saying it's just me. It's just me then.
I was going to say that, Joe Binnish, Joe, I got to thank you again for my SDL 39 project because that wouldn't have gotten done. And I jokingly say that Scale Trains would never have came out with it if I didn't finish that project. So
that was genius, your video. That was just...
But that's one of those things that, like, you know, I do the video series myself just to encourage myself to get projects done. And then I figure, why not share it with people? If I'm going to record and document, originally that started when I was just going to show my dad how to weather freight car trucks. And he just kept saying, well, I don't remember the technique that you use. So I recorded a video, put it on YouTube, shared it with him. Well, then a few views. I thought, well, people are kind of interested in this. So I did a few more. But working on other stuff for other people, for me, it's kind of hit and miss because I feel like sometimes, man, I could be spending a lot more of my time doing this. But at the same time, Joe, we kind of exchanged. He goes, well, I'll paint your SDL 39s if you give me some super detailed 187 scale cars. I got a couple more sitting on the shelf for him right behind me. And that's the type of thing that he's not going to want to maybe spend all that time other than he's working on a Studebaker right now. Want to sit there and detail a car like that because I actually enjoy sitting there I put antennas and windshield wipers and a new steering wheel and really detail the things up. But it was a good exchange between the two of us. I think we both are happy in the end. I got my SDL 39 done and I got another one yet to decal. But that to me kind of motivates and lights a fire because I'm doing something. I don't work with 1950 vehicles. So now I get a chance to do that. He gets a few vehicles that he's able to put on his railroad and they look real nice, or hopefully they look nice.
They do. No, I really get a charge out of doing that. And I usually have I have, like I said, these passenger cars for Randy. I've got a caboose for Eric Schwab and N-Scale, of all things. I've got two locomotives to build for like Mike Lustig. What else?
Bag of cabooses for Milt.
Yeah, yeah. I took a bag of cabooses home for Milt to blast the numbers off so that every BM&IR train doesn't have C-70 after. So, you know, it's just I get a charge out of it. Now, I don't get anything done on my railroad, but that's why we have work sessions.
See, and I've never really gotten involved with much of that. You know, I mean, there's been some exceptions. We helped a guy, an N-Scaler in Chaska, you know, couple of us did a lot of framework bench work for him. Joe, you were out there working on that too. Yep. And then Mike Fox and I did a lot of the wiring, the Digitrax wiring with the drops and the buses and some troubleshooting. Actually, I did something for Randy because I just put gears, you know, axle things in one of his proto locomotives. And I gave Jeff a bunch of scenery advice. Maybe I do more of that than I realize, you know. But it, like with Mike Lustig, it'd be fun to go up and help work on that railroad. But I don't think, you know, right now I wouldn't get permission to do that necessarily. So, which is another topic altogether.
Well, but, you mentioned proto briefly, Dave. I helped you out with your proto throttle. And that was for me. I thought, you know, it's a technology sometimes advances beyond. I mean, I had issues with my own proto throttle. And then Dave, when you started having problems, I thought, you know, I can take a look at it. Well, you know, it's not going to hurt anything. And I conversed with a few other guys that in the past that they shared a few secrets, a few tips. And now we put that back into your hands. And now you have something that works instead of a frustration of making a purchase and then sitting there going, well, geez, I spent it on that and it doesn't even work. And to be able to at least exchange in that regard. For me, I like the digital and I like the programming. And for some guys, that's just not their cup of tea.
Yeah, sometimes you can take it up to a point, but just getting it to that next level can be confusing, you know, which is funny that you'd even bring that up because I haven't even really used it much in the last, since you worked on it, mainly because I've gotten involved with all these other projects. So I might need a refresher course before too long. it's such a neat thing. And, you know, whatever made me buy it when I bought it, you know, was everything was right at the moment, but then that got sidetracked because all these other, you know, the scenery and the freight cars sort of edge that out, you know. But at some point when I go down and operate myself a little bit more, then I'll put that back into service and see how, although I did order a new faceplate for it because I wanted one of those green crusty looking ones that they're selling. And I'll do that myself. I can swap the parts on it. Yep.
And now you're ready. Now you're ready. The other guys can bring theirs over. Yeah. I mean, that allows your railroad to have that opportunity. I think, was it Greg? Who else has the proto throttle?
I have one that's on lease.
Oh, okay. That's right. You had one.
Now, Mike Jordan, I know you do a cool thing where you bring a car. Once you operate, somebody's operates on your layout, you actually make them a Jordan Walker produce. Is that kind of get you fired up? You're like, oh, I get to make a car for this guy's layout or this person.
What I do is the first time I operate on a new railroad, I make a refrigerator car that is a private refrigerator car, Jordan Walker. So that's fun to do. Also, when you go operate on a railroad, it's kind of nice to see a Jordan Walker produce car in the consist. I've also built some Jordan Walker cold storage buildings. Arlen Teetle has one on his railroad. When John O'Brien was first built his railroad, we had Minrail, and I built an awful lot of, I call them shadow buildings. They're just 1 inch deep, quick styrene buildings so that instead of a folded piece of paper on the layout, there's a silhouette of a building. And I operated up at Tom Hokanson's probably 20 years ago, and he had buildings that he had printed out on a dot matrix printer. Scotch tape to the wall for the different buildings, and they were turning yellow and peeling off the walls. So you know, I made a bunch of shadow buildings for temporary structures, which are still there after 20 years.
I know you built a wonderful ice dock for a certain person who has a Union Pacific layout. So I think we've all done that. And Ken, I know you've done so many things because you brought S-Scale actually scale detailed ore cars because of your work, you know.
Right. That was working with a manufacturer to develop a product. And I've done that over the years a few times, but also like you talk, I've gone and helped other people get their layouts running I've had people come over here, and it doesn't, they don't even have to be the same scale. Dave Hamilton's been over and helped me with DCC a number of times, and that's great. William helped me put together some decals I needed for a custom project. So again, that's part of the community here, and I think that's what's terrific about it.
Yeah, it's good. It fires me up. This is the end of part one of our discussion. Part two will continue the talk about modeling projects and staying motivated. Thank you for listening.
Of the Twin Cities Division. You can find us on Facebook in our group, the Twin Cities Division of the NMRA. You can email us at tcdnmra@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and don't forget to subscribe for future podcasts.